Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast. My name is Paul Ellis, and I'm your host for these programs about developments in this fast-growing industry. Amina Zakhanov is an investment officer at the Fund for Innovation in Development, which is hosted by the French government to fight poverty and promote sustainable economic growth. Zakhanov supported the creation of the Hellenic Development Bank in Greece and backed the Tunisian government's efforts to create a favorable investment ecosystem for startups. Amina is also co-founder of I'm Committed to Africa. Amina, can you pronounce the name of your co-founded organization for us in French, please, for our listeners?
It's Je m'engage pour l'Afrique.
Terrific. Thank you very much for taking that off of my shoulders. And this is a public policy incubator launched in 2020 with the mission of giving youth a seat at the table when it comes to Euro-African policymaking. So hello, Amina, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we're going to jump right into the questions that we have for you because we've got a lot to cover this morning. Now, we'll start out with, from an ESG and sustainable finance perspective, how should we measure and consider African youth inclusion concerns in the private sector?
Well, there's a few ways to go about this, but I think there's three paths that can emerge in how you can do it, and thankfully, they work better when you combine them. So the first thing is to make the young generation part of the core investment strategy. And so be able to invest in new jobs, better jobs for the youth, in improving livelihoods, in increasing sustainable agricultural practices that the young generation can then partake in leveraging technology and innovation, banking models that can allow younger generations to participate in the overall system that we've created. And of course, invest in youth employment dynamics that can also very much work. And that could be your core investment strategy and business. And that could be part of the general company's mission. I'm very inspired by models like the ones that were developed by Village Capital, if you've heard of them.
They built this. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, it's a wonderful organization that's been working on something called Smarter Systems Initiative, in which they provided their kind of clients with a list of things and tweaks that they could make into their evaluation process, their investment evaluation process and due diligence process to increase or to better the gender representation of their portfolios and to lessen the gender gap. So what they provided was a more consistent, comprehensive, and data-driven system to make sure that they were not overlooking great opportunities for investment just because there's a gender gap that's overwhelmingly present in most investment systems. And I'm wondering how we can create that for also young generations, access to credit, access to financial services, access to employment, access to investment. A lot of these things are process. And so perhaps that one of those things could also do, and that takes me to my second point, make them part of the operations by creating more inclusive hiring practices, promoting diversity, and not just performative diversity, but actual diversity within the teams and career growth opportunities within the teams. I know that some countries fare way better than others in that system, but I am still kind of hopeful to see more initiatives to include more different people within an organization, which generates so much wealth, not just in culture, but also in actual results. And the last bit of it, which I think is really important, and we've been dabbling in it here in France, it's to make them part of the decision-making process. And so having young, diverse asset managers or investors or anyone working in the financial system and part of this new generation be part of the decision-making is really paramount to be able to transform the system. And so in France, we created a model called mission companies, so les entreprises à mission, so mission-driven companies, so companies that do not just have profit as an end goal, but also a social and environmental cause as an end goal. And in their mission committee, which is kind of the shadow mirror of the board of directors, they can have intergenerational conversations. I am part of one of those things in an investment fund here in France. And you could see how powerful that becomes when different generations working in the same area or in different areas can have structural important conversations that lead to actual decisions. And so if you provide them with the space to be part of the strategy, decision-making process and operations, I think you can alleviate most of the African youth concerns by making them actors, not just making them subjects.
Terrific. Now, could you give us the name of the organization that you mentioned that is focused in this area again? Because I'm sure a lot of our followers would be interested in learning more about them, and I am too. Maybe we could reach out to them with your referral.
Yeah, they're called Village Capital.
Village Capital. Okay.
Yeah, and they're an NGO that works towards supporting entrepreneurship, supporting investment, supporting impact investment all across the board. And they also have a very much of an evidence-based approach by leveraging knowledge from researchers, MIT researchers mostly, but also kind of economists, anthropologists, sociologists all across the board, and they've been really doing fantastic work. I've been looking at them quite admiratively for a while now.
Great. Now, you know, one of the things that we do for our podcast guests is we provide a place for you to, or for us to attach links to anything that you think is valuable for our listeners and our followers to learn more about by accessing data themselves, doing their own reading and research. So remember that when we're putting together the program. And
for sure.
What's your outlook now on youth engagement in the public policy debates, specifically in financial sustainability conversations? Because this is we're at a point in the capital markets now where there's so much capital ready to be deployed around these kinds of growth issues across every economy on the planet. And one of the issues, of course, is how do we get that capital flowing and how do we get younger people engaged in that dialogue and in that process?
Well, I think it's a really fascinating topic because we've seen more and more young people engage in these types of conversation, but it's always quite anecdotal or exceptional enough for me to be able to name them,
okay.
Which is crazy once you come to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why there's more people, but clearly not enough to be able to have actual structural conversations is what I call the speaking up paradox. Basically, more and more people are calling the young generation and new generations to be part of the public debate, to be more and more worried about these non-voting, non-caring, nihilist kind of generational Z that nobody kind of understands, which is my generation, actually, and kind of, you know, being kind of scared of what's to come with this new generation. And then the second that said generation speaks up, we're quite respectfully asked to not say anything that we're not experienced in enough. Ask us to go for a walk and come back in a few decades.
Right.
Once you've experienced whatever capital market conversation you're in. And so it's an open and closed door all of the time. Mm. Which creates either the frustration to not want to engage anymore, or in my case, and the one of the people that we work with, creates the frustration to kick the door open.
Mm-hmm.
and be like, this is not a feasible situation, and we want to be able to have conversations that are not just about ourselves, social media, or climate change, which is the hyper youth topics. And I really do find it regressive and a bit laughable, to be honest, that we're still stuck in these same systems. And so for us, the strategy that we've undertaken to be able to have more youth engagement in public policy is to, I wouldn't say force it, but to provide proof that we can. And
okay.
So to support younger generations into writing policy that works, into creating the spaces for conversations, to destroying the mindset that there's such a thing as too complex of an issue. There's not a complex issue. There's complex explanations to normal issues. Mm-hmm. And the second you put that in your mind and that you can consider that you can make all things accessible, you'll make them more accessible. And so we really are fighting a mindset, but we're also kind of trying to create new content, new knowledge, new policy briefs, new conversations to make sure that there is actual youth engagement.
Okay, well, listen, I want you to know that our tiny little podcast platform is all about kicking the doors open and being disruptive. So you can count on us to be part of your team going forward, okay?
I'm happy with this.
Okay, good. So now, listen, we're now talking about the African youth population and the human population explosion that's going to be happening on the African continent over the next generation. In fact, a third of the African continent human population will be below 25 years old in the next half century. Youngest on the planet, by the way. So how should the global financial ecosystem be preparing for this transition?
Well, I think the same way that we've overlooked so many factors when we went through our first kind of massive demographic transitions, whether it be the job creation speed or the evolution of our capitalist markets, I think we need to really take a step back and make sure that we're taking into account all the sort of parameters. And one of them is kind of behavioral understanding and understanding how younger generations actually behave. What's their response to specific things? What's their response to a crisis, to inflation, to fear-mongering, to new polarizing conversations? That should be the baseline of how we prepare for this. And so it takes lots, in my opinion, lots and lots and lots of investment in education and skills and making sure that this new generation does actually find a job. We've seen cases, for example, in Tunisia, where the job market was not at all in coherence with the educational market, and we ended up with hundreds of thousands of PhDs who were unable to find an entry-level job, which created even more of a frustration because they were supposed to be at the top of the ladder in terms of competitiveness. And so make sure that we deconstruct the perception of what success looks like as a, you know, as a post-grad, over-grad, and blah, 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 and create new environments where people can feel safe and looking at different crafts, trades, trying on different things, being entrepreneurs, being temporary entrepreneurs, not being stuck in the same environments. And that will take a lot of financial flexibility in actually trusting younger generations to make sure that they can use money and they can get money and that they can re-get money. I don't think this generation is specifically looking for, you know, like land ownership or propriety or all of these things. They're looking for opportunity first and for personal growth first. And so how do we finance that is the main question. And then, of course, with entrepreneurship, we need to make sure that those opportunities are inclusive, that there's enough capital to make sure that we sustain it, that we're not just letting them run into a wall. And those can be created with the level of, you said it, the capital that is currently flowing in the world is absolutely humongous. There is ways to level it correctly. And then the one thing that I think should be considered across the board is really climate smart investments. Make sure that these young people, when they get old, have a life that they can live in a livable planet would be really nice. And that would be, I think, the overlining most important thing. And climate smart investments also create climate smart jobs and create climate smart initiatives for entrepreneurship and more open citizens and clear-minded citizens that do not just want to escape their homes. And I think that's really, really important.
You know, we were having a conversation with another guest earlier today for another recording session where that seems to be happening now in many companies that are dealing now with these regulatory infrastructures that are going into place around the world. So I'm Committed to Africa is an NGO. It's run by people in your generation across the board. It's also fairly new, and it operates as a generational advocacy and training tool. How are you building an economically sustainable business model for I'm Committed to Africa, and what's your approach to public funding and to philanthropy?
And that is, Paul, a question I ask myself every morning. How do we build an economically sustainable business model for an NGO?
I'm glad you said that because I ask myself the same question every morning.
How? How? Whoever finds the answer first, just call up the other one.
Yes.
But no, but honestly, when we founded Je m'engage pour l'Afrique, so JMA, we just created it out of frustration in the beginning because we wanted a space for us to be able to write new things, think new things, speak new things, be able to, you know, be around new people and have spaces of expression. And to be honest, we really didn't think that it would get to what it is now. And we're so proud of how it became. But so just as a small recap of what we actually do, we're halfway between a think tank and a do tank, which means that we create policy, so we build policy, and then we recommend that policy to policymakers or across the board in Europe, in West Africa, in North Africa, and at several levels. So it could be for municipalities, for ministries, for all types of organizations, but also for the private sector sometimes. And we make policymakers, current policymakers, and the new generation interact through a lot of events. But we also have a strong philosophy of peer learning. And so most of our programs, of our learning programs, are based on peer learning and coaching, based on really strong literature that we've been encountering on the impact of learning and confidence outcomes in people of our targets, which is age 20 to kind of 40 years old. And we also have a very strong inclination to financial topics and financial sustainability. I have to admit, it's also because we as people really love those topics. And so it kind of created the inclination for it. But we also speak a lot of on climate, agriculture, industry. But they're, you know, they're unsexy topics for younger generations. They're not the ones that, you know, populate Instagram feeds. They're not the ones that people make TikTok threads or whatever they call them about. But they're essential and important topics, and we can see our generation interacting with them. And so the thing that we're also very much attached to is being able to interact with them in a sensible, sensitive, cohesive, correct manner. And to be able to have arguments, counter arguments, build contradiction, respond to contradiction, have normal, sane debates within each other, and kind of remove ourselves from the overly polarized ecosystem that we've been dwelling in for the last 10, 15, 20 years in public debate and in political debate. And so it's not just how do we make people engage in these specific important topics, but how do we make them listen to each other?
Mm. Okay.
And that's really important for us. And so what we produce is policy briefs, trainings, events, meetups, things that we could monetize, but we do not want to, because we want to create public goods. We want to be able to have everyone access our elements. And so the only way out for us for an economically sustainable business model is to diversify.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've looked at sponsorship from private organizations and you know, how to convince them that their CSR strategy and our programs are quite aligned. We're recipients of public grants, whether it be from, you know, French cooperation or European cooperation. We've also convinced private donors, so individuals, to support us in different ways. We're really built on a model of both salaried and volunteers. That work together, and that also creates a huge mass of working and of labor that we can utilize. And now our next frontier is being able to convince the philanthropy ecosystem that there is something to be done with us. And you know, the philanthropic system is really specific about the methods. It's specific
right.
about the themes that it usually supports. We're usually looking at into health, humanitarian, all of these things. But we kind of want to convince them that, you know, like, new players don't just look different, but they also do different things and do completely differently than what's been done before. And I think we're new players here. We've got a strong advantage of having built this core network in most Francophone African countries, which are difficult to access, to be honest. Initiatives like ours are scarce and tend to suffer from the 3-year deadline. We've passed the 3 years old. We're over 3 years old now, and we're still here. So that must say something about the strength of our organization. But yeah, it's diversify, be flexible, always be on your toes, and you know, whenever you see an open door jump.
You know, you've introduced me to a new way to position what you're doing. I've been focusing on the idea of think tanks as part of the sustainability movement financially for 20 years, and now you're talking about do tanks as well. I really like that image, I've had podcast conversations recently with people, for example, from the Aspen Institute, who are very frustrated at the very small percentage of philanthropic capital that flows through their organization to climate issues and all of these issues that we're facing around the world. You're right. The historically, philanthropic institutions are focused on a handful of older concepts that they fund on a regular basis. So from a sustainable business model perspective, what's the most important thing for you and I'm Committed to Africa to focus on with your team in 2024?
So the last 3 years were really kind of our time to structure, build, start, kickstart, kind of bootstrap everything. And now we have staff, which we're so very proud of because we didn't think we'd ever have enough staff. We have our own offices. We have a massive strategy for growth. And so now our objective is really to kind of get inspired by every other organization that's been through what we've been through and continue our very organic scaling. And that is launching our local offices. So we are close to our first opening in Togo and then an upcoming office in Morocco to really be able to be as close as possible to our core beneficiaries. We're working on different branches that will have parallel operating models to continue to keep our flexibility. And so how does GMA not be just an NGO, but can become like a holding to a bigger brand that can expand, where we can open also governance to new people. We can also open, you know, opportunities for growth for new people and not just be, you know, the core team that we've been for the last years. And we're also scaling towards an English speaking ecosystem, which has been a lot more vivid and active than the Francophone one has been on these specific topics. And, you know, there's the African policy conversations in Nigeria, which is tremendously well run and that we're very inspired by. There's a lot of organizations that we'd love to get closer with, but that would entail doing a little bit of translation. So I'm really happy that I get to do this conversation in English. It doesn't happen very often that I do, but this is great. But
we're
I'm also
quite
worried.
We're glad that you're doing it in English as well.
Yeah, I can imagine. But yeah, we're considering even, you know, like how do we change the name? We didn't think of this when we started this. And now we're quite worried that Je m'engage pour l'Afrique is a little mouthy, to be honest. So yeah, those are the kind of the big questions, and we're continuing our scaling. We're trying to be able to open up to new places. So I'll be at the Warwick Africa Summit on March 3rd in the UK to be able to kind of showcase this new strategy. And yeah, so that's what we want to do, be able to scale, kind of start to have more operational leeway for growth and be outside of just our European and West and North African ecosystems that we've been on so far.
Okay, well, listen, when you have an opportunity to meet Wissal Ben Moussa from Sand to Green, I don't know if you've met her.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, that's a fabulous organization that we recently had as a podcast guest. What they are doing is turning desert land into oases. They're reclaiming land that has lost its productive capability. They're reclaiming land in Morocco now, and they're a terrific organization.
Oh,
she's fantastic. So you should meet her.
I'm
as
Moroccan
well.
Myself, so yeah, I'm quite interested.
Wissal Ben Moussa, Sand to Green. So
okay, let me check it out. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'll look it up.
Sure. So now listen, where online can our followers for the Sustainable Finance Podcast go to learn more about I'm Committed to Africa opportunities for youth participation in African public policy, and how can they contact you to learn more about the issues we've discussed in today's podcast conversation?
Well, LinkedIn is really the best way to go. So we have a LinkedIn page called Je m'engage pour l'Afrique. We'll probably put in the link with this podcast.
Good.
and yeah, I'm also available on LinkedIn and on X, formerly known as Twitter, as they say. And I'm more than happy to engage in any type of conversation. It's always really wonderful to see people interact with our model and provide us with their insight and their expertise. So we're always very open to having a chat. And if it's to access our publications and everything we do, it's jmaafrique.com, but Afrique in French, so Q-U-E.
Okay, great. Now, listen, we also, I may have mentioned this earlier in the program, but we can attach documents and links to sites to this program, and please send us any that you think would be helpful for our followers.
I'll send you a little list.
Terrific.
Perfect.
So listen, thanks again, Amina Zakhnov, co-founder of I'm Committed to Africa and an investment officer at the Fund for Innovation in Development, for joining me in today's episode. And our followers can join us again next week for another episode of the Sustainable Finance Podcast. I'm Paul Ellis, and I'm your host for these episodes.